The final case this morning is the Attorney General of Ohio versus Pickaway County Skilled Gaming, LLC. Chief Justice Brown has recused on this matter, and we have sitting in his place Judge Vernon Preston of the 3rd District Court of Appeals. Welcome, Judge Preston.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Carney.
Good morning. May it please the court. If I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal today. Ohio law requires operators of legal skill-based amusement machines to keep their machines distinct from illegal slot machines by ensuring that the games turn on pure skill, not any element of chance, and by awarding prizes worth no more than $10. That prize limit has a rational basis and is thus constitutional for at least 3 reasons. First, it's rational as a standalone economic regulation of pure skill games. Second, it's rational as a preventive or prophylactic barrier against actual chance-based gambling. And third, and perhaps most important, its rationality must be assessed solely in terms of the law's actual operation or functional effect, not by the labels or vocabulary or terms used to achieve that effect. And that third point is most important because it appears to be the issue that led the appeals court astray, and although not clear, seems to be underneath it all the plaintiff's real complaint. They seem to object that it's unfair or irrational to take a skill-based machine and just because it awards a big prize, lump it in with things traditionally called slot machine, schemes of chance, or gambling, and that you just can't call something by that label. But the way to resolve that issue, because this court's always said that labels don't matter and that we look at a law's effect, is to ask, suppose the legislature did not put this prize limit directly in the definition and say if you give too big a prize, you're out of the definition, you're now in a slot machine. What if they had just defined skill-based machines in terms of skill and chance, which they don't object to and isn't part of the challenge here today? And what if the legislature in another chapter of the code had simply written a law that says if you have one of these machines, you shall not give prizes worth more than $10? Would that law be constitutional or not? I'm not sure the brief ever really answered that question, but if they do today, whichever answer they give shows why their case collapses. Because if they say that law would be okay as long as you put it somewhere else and just said we're going to keep the skill-based label on, just don't give out a prize, well, if they say that law is okay, they're admitting that their real problem here is labels. But this court says in Bank One Dayton, we look at how a law operates, not its labeled. The court said in State v. Singer that the General Assembly is not bound by Webster's. It can define things how it wishes. And here they did provide a precise definition, $10, very clear, bright line. And if they admit that's it, they're admitting their whole beef is with the label, and that can't be an equal protection violation. If, on the other hand, they say, no, even if you did it separately, that would be a violation, then they have to explain why, because they focus so much on how dare you lump us in with gambling as a label or a vocabulary matter, they never say, what exactly is wrong with the $10 limit? If you take it on its own terms, and you did have such a separate law, well, is it that no limit's allowed? Is there a constitutional right to play even skee ball, some skill-based game, and win $1 million or $10,000? Of course not. And if some law is allowed, is there some problem with $10? That's unconstitutional. 50, we could live with that. Of course not. Line drawing, just like speed limits, you have to draw a line somewhere. Unless they say, well, you don't have a right to be unlimited. We don't have an objection to this particular line, except that the court, you can never find a line anywhere. So then the legislature would be forced to say, okay, no prizes at all. So now we've got to shut down Magic Mountain or Chuck E. Cheese from even giving out, you know, Cracker Jack prizes or the cheap plastic trinkets if you win at skee ball. Well, it can't be the case that we have to be all or nothing. And that means there's a line to be drawn. So if you look at it in its functional effect, and their label-based argument is rejected, as it should be, well, then you're left with what are the rational bases here for this real limit? Well, first, take it just as a skill game. Pretend there's no such thing as gambling, no such thing as chance-based machines that are out there causing problems in Ohio. Well, there are all sorts of reasons to say, even if you're playing innocent skee ball, let's cap the prize at $10. We cap prices on all sorts of products throughout the law, and we also say if you buy a certain product, we regulate its size, shape, weight, color, you know, the interest rate on your home or the interest rate on payday loans. We say, here are the parameters. And so there's no right to go beyond $10. And separate from that, There's also a reason to say it incentivizes people to keep blowing too much money. And we can't follow someone around and say, don't spend more than 10 bucks or 50 bucks at a time or at a week. So draining the incentive by saying you're not going to win a car, you're just going to win some, you know, teddy bear at most.
Counsel, is that, you're saying that's a legitimate purpose for the state to be the babysitter for the gamblers?
Well, if they are truly skill-based, the players.
The players, let's put it that way.
Get into the word gambling.
All right, okay.
Certainly, a lot of people, as a policy matter, say, hey, why shouldn't I be able to get a payday loan at whatever interest rate I want, or a home mortgage for 28%? And there's a great policy argument to be had out there, but constitutionally, there is no libertarian limit on regulating prices of goods and services.
But how can we say that $10 is rationally related to a legitimate government purpose and $25 is not, or $5 is not?
Your Honor, that's the classic problem of line drawing, and this Court and the U.S. Supreme Court has always said the fact that when you draw a line here, why is it that I'm perfectly legal to drive 64, but all of a sudden at 66,
the difficulty I'm having in understanding your argument is I'm looking for the basis for the legitimate government interest fixed at $10.
Well,
can you help me with that?
Well, let's take it in two parts. First, is there a legitimate government interest in saying, how about not $1 million? And once you get there, then we're just negotiating price. We're saying, how high do you go? And if you say, we know if someone is playing for amusement, their instinct is not what this Court called in Krause v. Cleveland, the gambling instinct of whatever the basis of the game, skill or chance of, I want more, 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 I want to win a car, $1,000 for putting a quarter in, $100, you know, maybe if you and I were in the legislature, we might say, give them 20 or 50 bucks. But there's nothing irrational about 10 in particular. And as I understand their argument, they're not saying 10 is too low and violates some substantive due process right to get at least 20 bucks or at least 50. They're saying any line drawing is a problem because the government can only regulate skill versus chance. And that's a problem because we should be able to regulate at least at some level. If you follow their argument, we couldn't rewrite this with a $1,000 limit.
Do we get into an equal protection argument here then if we use $10?
Well, they're raising it as an equal protection argument, but I think it's an unsuccessful one because courts allow all sorts of prices or speed limits or things to be set with numbers. And the alternative to a number, in fact, we do in other areas say, like in the Consumer Sales Practice Act, if you charge an unconscionable price, it can be a crime. Well, there, you don't even have a fixed what's $100, and we do that. So I think it's better and easier for them to operate with a $10 limit than to say, don't charge too much, and we'll find out later what too much is.
But so games of skill are now regulated.
Correct.
But we've got keno in our state. Is there any $10 limitation on a keno game?
Or, Your Honor,
or does that create a different category, or have I gotten too far
off
the
statute?
Keno is
totally outside Chapter 2915 because it's run by the state. And certainly there are people who make policy arguments. Why does the government run a lottery as it has for 37 years or so in Ohio? But
what's the limit on that, Mr. Carney?
I'm not sure. I admit I don't play keno, but there are regulations the Lottery Commission puts out on, you know, what they do and when they pay these multi-state games. When you play those, they're, you know, the tens of millions of dollars. But to say we're going to do one thing one way when the state does it, another thing when charities do it, and by the way, if you're these for-profit companies that run skill-based machines, then we're going to say we cap your prizes. There's no constitutional right to pay for play for unlimited prizes. And also, once you admit there's a limit, there's nothing any worse about $10 than $50. But I also want to turn to the other rational basis for this law, is that even if a game is totally based on skill, having a prize limit is still a prophylactic barrier against segueing into chance-based gambling. Because a lot of these games, and we know from, you know, there were all sorts of civil and criminal litigation from 2003 to 2007 in particular, but even in years before and after, where people were running machines that were billed as skill-based, but actually you couldn't win, or you could only win once a week. It was built in. And the bigger the prize, the more the temptation is to flip that switch to make sure if you're giving out $10,000, you don't want a talented player to come along and drain you so that you don't make any money.
Well, counsel,
now I want to stress.
Counsel, the objectors to this limit are not the players. Am I correct?
Correct. They're the operators.
Yeah, it's not the players who are saying, let me, you know, play so I can win as much money as I possibly can. It's the operators, and their argument is if we don't incentivize the playing by larger prizes, we're not going to be able to justify whatever the cost is to the player.
Right. And to the extent they say that, gee, if we can't give big money, we're not going to draw as much money out of our customers, ironically, that attack on the law actually supports our position. Because as long as you say there's no equal protection barrier to what some critique as paternalism of we don't want players to spend too much money. They're admitting the bigger the prize, the bigger the draw to drain. And keep in mind, these are legal games that kids play.
All right, well, here's another question. Is the theory that the bigger the prize, the more I can charge per chance or per play, let's call it that, per play, as opposed to the same cost per play, I just do it more often?
I think it's the latter. If the legislature had chosen to say, don't charge more than a buck or 50 cents or something, they could have. But the way they've done it, I think they've adopted the theory that you're going to keep feeding quarters for 7, 8, 9 hours because you're dreaming of the big payoff. And we have a valid reason to guard against that. And we also have a valid reason against removing the temptation for someone to flip that switch and make it a chance-based game. And one of the things that gets bogged down in litigation is what really determines skill or chance. And the idea of having another barrier so we could prosecute you in one of two ways if you violate both rules, you run a chance-based game and you also give big prizes, to say we're going to make it easier to prosecute by another angle, there's nothing wrong with that. We do that all the time. And so that removes the incentive and makes it easier to prosecute, which further removes the incentive to try to play cat and mouse by rejiggering your game constantly to make it chance-based and hide from the authorities and turn the switch again when the cops are coming. And so we have a valid reason to say, we're going to set the warning track out here a little further. We're going to reduce the incentive to cross over from skill to chance. I want to stress
that— Is that a proven practice where the state has actually prosecuted people who've had parallel systems that—
Yes and no, Your Honor. I want to be careful about stressing. They brought this as a civil action, alleging all their machines are skill-based, so I'm not accusing them in any way, shape, or form. But when there were prosecutions, every time there was either a prosecutor or even a civil injunction on a nuisance or other theories to go after gambling, right away, even if the state won or the local prosecutor won, they would come back and say, well, we reprogrammed the machine. Now it's safe. Now it's all based on skill. Well, how do we know? We have to take it back apart, bring in the expert, all that. But if we say, you know what, on top of this, we're not going to let you charge more than $10. The big money incentive to cheat is drained away. By the way, they mentioned as a side issue, well, what if somebody really is running a chance-based machine, but they keep the prizes low? We think that's a lot less likely. There's a lot less incentive for an operator to break the law just to save the $8 teddy bear. But if they did, that's still not a constitutional violation. As long as we make it illegal, if it's harder to prosecute those people who are cheating but for low-dollar teddy bears, well, there's no equal protection violation that some criminals get caught and some criminals don't because they're all against the law. So it's not like that group has some basis here to complain.
Counsel, and subsection C of the statute appears to allow players to accumulate their vouchers so that they can accumulate those vouchers so long as they don't exceed $10 per play.
Correct.
But it appears that all of a sudden the $10 goes out the window as a rational basis because now all of a sudden you can redeem it for $100 or $200.
Not at all, Your Honor, because if we're not going to follow around each player to make sure you don't do enough collectively, I mean, even at Chuck E. Cheese, you could spend enough weeks and weeks and weeks there, a quarter at a time, to blow money. If you drain the incentive to where it's $10 per play, if you play a few quarters, get 10 bucks, a few quarters, get 10 bucks, you're still not holding out that hope of, wow, one big hit, I could walk away with $1 million in my pocket. So as long as we can draw some line that we draw it per play, to draw it in the aggregate and make it per player, because we don't know when a different player walks up, you'd have to follow around players or put up video cameras everywhere or something. So remember, rationality just means, what is this a plausible way to do it? If there are better ways to be more precise, this isn't strict scrutiny here. This is rational basis. And I also want to stress that, again, whichever way they answer it, that this law cannot be a problem simply because you're taking a game of skill and calling it a slot machine. In fact, the recent casino laws, which are not before the court, do have definitions of slot machines for what goes on in the casino. And that new definition that's in our Constitution even says, regardless of the degree of player skill or chance. So our voters have endorsed a constitutional definition on something more recent than our Equal Protection Clause that says we can define it how we want. And that new commission is even given power, none that moots this case because it doesn't kick in for another year, but to regulate these machines. And if this court says, no, your hands are tied, then not only could the legislature not impose a cap, but neither could a commission. And it's simply not plausible to say that we can't have any limit at all, nor is it plausible to say, well, you can have your limit, but only if you use different words, and that slapping bad words on us alone violates our equal protection rights. And for those reasons, we believe you should reverse the court below and uphold the constitutionality of this statute. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Ms. Zalamini?
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the court. My name is Gail Zalamini, along with Alphonse Cincioni from Butler Cincioni and DiCuccio, Melissa Lipchak. We represent Pickaway County Skilled Gaming, LLC, and Stephen Klein. Also in the courtroom today is Mr. James Petro on behalf of the Ohio Coin Machine Associations, who filed the amicus brief. To start out, Justice O'Donnell, your question regarding Keno, the state form of legalized gambling, you are permitted to bet $1 to $20 every 4 minutes, because a game is run from 11:04 in the morning to 1:44 a.m. 7 days a week. What you can receive if you pick the appropriate number of numbers that match is anywhere between $2 for a $1 bet and $2 million for a $20 bet. This case—
I'm not familiar with Keno. Is that gambling?
That's the state online Keno that came into effect
I know what you're referring to, but
yes.
the game itself, is that a gambling game?
That's a gambling game that is run through the lottery.
Okay, but we're not talking about gambling.
No, but
here.
Justice O'Donnell.
I understand he
asked
the question.
Yes.
I'm trying for my own to clarify. We're not connecting gambling with this case, right?
Well, that depends how we interpret 29-1501-AAA1, Your Honor.
A nice introduction, wasn't it?
And this is the reason, sir. Individuals at this point in time can go into a legitimate business, such as my client has down in Circleville, called Spinner Stillscott Games. What it is an adult amusement arcade. And in that arcade, you have about 150 machines that are 1 cent or 5 cent machines that you can play on, okay? They go into the legitimate business. All these players are similarly situated. And what ends up happening is, depending on what they play and how good their skill is, the prize rewarded, according to 29-1501-AAA1, determines whether or not they have a prize of a wholesale value of less than $10, which would be legal, or the prize of a wholesale value of greater than $10, and that's not legal. Because
you made that argument in your briefs that
yes,
how will they know that it's really $10? That applies to any statute that sets a monetary limit. You have theft statutes. How do you know you've exceeded the? When you steal something, you thought it was worth less, so you're under the statute. I mean, that argument, I don't see how that argument makes much sense, because you have those limits in any type of criminal statute.
The argument in this case, Your Honor, is most of those criminal statutes denote what the crime is, and the amount of money or the limits that are put on those define the level of a crime. In this case, if a player's skill is such that they get awarded a prize with a wholesale value of greater than $10, that is the crime.
So you're suggesting that if the teddy bear is worth $10.05, the police are going to swoop in and arrest the player?
That's what the law says it is.
Okay.
It says that
What limit would you say is constitutional?
What I think is constitutional, and what I believe the state, and why their argument, as they have a legitimate basis for the prophylactic barrier or for the big prizes, is that you have, if you want to put a limit on this, then you put a limit on what the big prize is. Because just as Judge Preston pointed out,
I'm not following you.
There is no limit.
Put $1 million limit on?
There is no limit on skill-based amusement machines. If you want to take 1 million of those vouchers and put them all together and buy a prize, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, but you've won 1 million times to do that. You're saying that if you win once, is your argument that there should be no limit if you win once?
None of the machines that exist. What I am arguing is that the limit that is articulated in this statute is unconstitutional because it's discriminating against players, which also against
operators. Let me ask my question again.
Yes, ma'am.
What limit on one play by one player is constitutional? What dollar amount is constitutional?
For them to receive?
Yes.
I think the most amount that before this new law came in, the most that they could receive was like $1,000.
And is $1,000 in your mind constitutional then?
I think that the state, as the state has said, can draw any line. And if...
So wait, you said they can draw any line, but they can't
draw a
$10
line. They can draw any line, but that line has to have a legitimate basis. What our case is today and what we're claiming to this court is, the line that is drawn that makes the act itself, because of the reward of the prize, discriminatory and not rational, is that not a legitimate interest in that manner.
Okay,
to prohibit unlimited schemes of chance.
$1,000 limit is legitimate. $10 limit is not a legitimate number.
I cannot, standing before you today, in all honesty, say, hey, this is the number. What I can do is follow the law and follow the Constitution and say there has to be a rational basis. If they had a rational basis on which they wanted to, number one, which they could have done, put a limit on the prize. If this is the real state's interest not to allow illegal gambling, then the ultimate prize is what you should focus on,
so
not
you're
what an individual play is.
You're disagreeing with the categorization of $10 as being rational versus $1,000 being rational.
I'm saying that the $10 in direct relationship to the prize that is rewarded based on how the player is playing the machine is not rational.
Nah, you've lost me on that argument. Try that one again.
Okay. Whether it was $10 or whether it was $20 or whether it was $30, that in this argument is really immaterial. And the reason that the value itself is immaterial is because the process and the manner in which the law is written is the basis of the unconstitutionality. No legitimate state interest is set forth by the state, whether it was in the trial court where they argued the evils of gambling, or in the appellate court where they talked about amusement, or now in this court today where there are different prophylactic bans and other reasons being supported. But there is no rational basis on which the value that an individual is rewarded. Okay, that is what that's what this case is about. The value of the prize reward itself for a single play on a legal game is related to the government's legitimate interest in prohibiting unlawful schemes of chance. That's what the Court of Appeals held.
Counsel.
And so it's the issue of the prize reward, that value being the focus.
Counsel.
Yes, sir.
I may be misinterpreting what you were saying to Justice Stratton, but you said no rational basis was set forth for this legislation.
That's true.
Wouldn't that be true of almost any legislation that passes the General Assembly or the Congress, for that matter?
No.
If they were required to explain in the legislation the rational basis for the legislation, we wouldn't have much legislation.
Sir, if, Your Honor, if that was what I said, I misspoke.
Okay.
Because what I know is that the state does not have to explain in any legislation the meaning that they're writing that legislation.
Right.
But once it's not a suspect class or a fundamental right, and we're getting down to the point where we're evaluating it, just like all the cases in the equal protection cases have done.
So you're suggesting during the presentation of their defense to your equal protection charge, no rational basis was advanced by the state.
Yes, Your Honor. And in the Court of Appeals, the 10th Appellate District, they tried very, very hard with all the issues, and they gave great deference to the state as to how a rational relationship occurs between a wholesale value of a prize rewarded playing a legal game to the government's interest in prohibiting unlawful schemes of chance. You see, the effect of this will be that the player who would receive a prize in excess of a wholesale value of $10, then they're charged with gambling. So under 2915.02a2 and 2915.02f and public gaming, 2915.04, those are charges. Those charges would apply to the owner of the machine, and in addition to that, the owner or lessor of the property would have the charge of operating a gambling house.
Counsel, I'm totally in the dark as to what these games of skill might be. Could you describe them? I assume checkers would be a game of skill, chess would be a game of skill.
The game,
throwing softballs at lead-weighted milk bottles at the county fair would be a game of skill, even though it's, the skill required is a little more than you might think when you look at the bottles.
What the skill-based amusement machines are, Your Honor, it can be a mechanical device, it can be a digital device, it can be a video.
Well, is the skill simply pushing a button or pulling
a
lever?
Actually, the skill itself involves your mental acuity, your ability for reaction time, because all of the games can be a little bit different. Some of them are like puzzle games where you have to fit in the pieces. Others are where you have to move things in order to fit into a certain pattern to win. Others are that you have to line things up, and if you line them up in a correct row, those are the type of games that you're looking at.
A time limit to it?
My client does not have any skill-based amusement machines with time limits. Okay. There were skill-based amusement machines, such as the Tic Tac Fruit cases. Those were timed. In this case, what we have is a law that says we are not going to limit you on the number of times you can play these games. We're not going to limit you on the amount of the ultimate prize that you can go ahead and get with any rewards you get from these games. We are not going to limit you on the number of vouchers that you can use to get your big prize. What we're going to say is that if you're operating this machine, and I could operate it, maybe I have a little less skill than you would have. And if you operate it and you end up getting a prize that is outside of that value, then basically you're going to be a criminal and I'm not. And that's where the discriminatory effect is.
But doesn't it take longer to reach a bigger prize if you have to play more often as opposed to one play? And if you're skillful enough, you could win a $10,000 prize. But with the limit, you'd have to win 10,000, not 10,000 times, but 1,000 times with 1,000 plays?
Well, Your Honor,
doesn't that, in a sense, you know, sort of back up the state's argument that one of the purposes is to either limit play or slow down play so that you don't have people throwing their money away?
Actually, in essence, if an individual is going after a big prize, they're going to play as long as they want to until they reach that prize. The state's position, in essence, is doing the exact opposite. Because what they're saying is, I have enough skill to be rewarded a certain level. But what we're going to do is, we're not going to give you or allow the operators to give you your just reward for reaching that skill. What we want you to do is keep playing. And so in that respect, they have to play more times in order to reach that. And that's what they will do. But even if you go, you know, the amusement issue that came up in the Court of Appeals, the reason the amusement issue came up is because that's what the state was arguing at that point, that amusement and having lower prizes equals amusement, where higher prizes equal gambling. That's what the basis was. And that's why the Court of Appeals went through the scenario that amusement itself has value, added amusement has value. If this skill-based amusement machine was not specifically exempted from the scheme of chance in Ohio law under 2915.013, it would be a slot machine. It would be a gambling machine. It would be illegal. They've made an exception. And in making that exception, they have then also have 2915.01AAA2, which says, hey, you can't have any chance in this. Any chance that exists is within the player's control. So it's not like playing the lottery. In fact, it's not like going to Chuck E. Cheese and paying your money and doing the big spin wheel to see if you can get the 5,000 points on that roll if you hit the square that big instead of the one that big. The amusement value also argument loses any type of support when you look at the kind of prizes that are in kids' arcades. Sure, there are the rubber snakes, but there are also the TVs and the computers and the Xbox 360s.
If we agree with your position, what is the effect of a ruling affirming the Court of Appeals? There's no $10 limit, correct?
That's true, Your Honor.
And then what would the limit be for the games?
The limit would be what the just reward of skill that person, that player, achieved. Whatever those are.
How would we determine the monetary value of the just reward of skill?
The way that they do these on the skill-based amusement machines, Your Honor, is it's by points. And so they would just have the amount of points that they accumulated from playing, and whatever that organization or that business's points converted that to in dollars. You see, and I understand that the Court of...
How does that not become gambling?
Because, in essence, the gambling itself... The way that gambling is defined And the way that this skill-based amusement machine would violate the gambling statute is the type of prizes. That's how the police power and control has come over the skill-based amusement machines. They're not allowed to give out cash. They're not allowed to give out gift cards. They're not allowed to give out anything related to fire, tobacco, alcohol, guns, anything of that nature. And so in that essence and regard, that's where the control for the gambling, because gambling is normally associated with cash. And so that control is still in effect.
Counsel, how much does it cost to play one of these skill, pure skill games?
The true skill games, if you go to Chuck E. Cheese, those prices...
I'm talking about in your operation.
Okay, but they're more expensive than the one that my clients have. Chuck E. Cheese is like 60 cents to a dollar for every play. What my client has are penny machines and nickel machines. And in those penny machines to nickel machines, they can play more than one penny at a time per single play. Okay, but the most that they could ever play on a penny machine is 64 cents.
Okay, and for 64 cents, you want to say, I can put in 64 cents, I can play this game once and line up all the squares or dots or whatever you want to do, and I can win $1 million.
No, that's not what you can win on that penny machine.
What can you win on the penny machine?
The most that you could ever win on that penny
machine. Well, I know, $10. Or the maximum is vouchers that would accumulate for no more than $10 prize.
That's true.
All right, if the limits were taken off as to the amount, the dollar value of a prize that you could purchase with these vouchers that come your way by virtue of all your plays on the penny machines, and say that became unlimited,
okay.
I mean, you just said a limit, would your cost then rise for the play on these penny machines? You no longer have a penny machine, you'd have a $10 machine, you'd have a $20 machine, the cost for the player would rise from a penny to...
No, the machines would stay the same. The only difference...
They wouldn't be retooled to take more of the player's investment.
No, Your Honor, because the machines are skill-based amusement machines, okay?
Pay for the opportunity to play that game.
Yes, but when they were talking about retooling, they were talking about the software inside the machines itself.
I'm not talking about switching from legal to illegal. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that if you are at risk of having, your client is at risk of having to award a bigger prize,
right.
Say a $10,000 prize, what's to stop it from saying, in order to be eligible to play the skilled game with the potential of getting a $10,000 prize, I'm going to charge you $5 to play the game, or I'm going to charge you $10 for one game instead of the penny that you're now playing.
The machines that my client has cannot be reprogrammed to do that. They are
penny machines. So he gets machines new
machines. And five
so they get
machines.
New machines. What?
I have not seen, in the 3 years that I've been doing this type of law, I have not seen machines that take that amount of money. And the reason is because when player himself have the opportunity to determine, you know, if they're going to play one penny or two pennies or three pennies. And the reason they have that opportunity is because if they pay additional pennies, okay, there are different levels of the machine, the skill-based amusement machine, that they can play on. So instead of just lining up maybe the row on the left, they can also, if they pay 3 cents instead of 1 cent, have an opportunity to line the row up on the right. And so in the way that these skill-based machines are manufactured, it has to be on a level in which the coins themselves can be multiplied. So I cannot perceive, and maybe it's because of how I know these machines operate, but I cannot perceive of a situation where you're going to have, you know, like when you go to Vegas and you see the big slot machine where you put in your $10 token and you get the one pull on the arms bandit. That's not how these machines work. And it's because most of them are dealt with on a mathematical, you know, arena that multiplies.
Let me just finish here.
Okay.
What would stop the cost per play to rise from a penny to a dollar?
I'm trying to envision machines that could do that, okay? And I'm having a problem with that because I haven't seen those. I would anticipate if they could be produced, they would be created at some point in time. But the other problem
with
that...
If there was unlimited amount of a prize, would it not incentivize the owner of these machines to then retool them or get new machines or machines to be developed, so it was more costly for a player to play because of the incentive of a bigger prize?
I believe that that's not true. And the reason I believe that's not true is because if you make it so costly for a player to play, nobody's going to come and play.
Council, I'd like to ask, is the description of how these games work, these machines work, in the record? Can we go to the record and get a detailed description of how these machines work?
No, Your Honor, you can't. And the reason being is because when the complaint was filed, the names of the games were listed in the complaint, and then it went straight to constitutionality versus unconstitutional. And so there was not any situation where we had depositions or we had that kind of evidence.
So your argument would be we don't need to know how these machines work. Ipso facto, the $10 limit is a constitutional violation?
It's a constitutional violation, and I understand that the court didn't accept the other propositions of law, but I do want to say that the value that we're talking about, it's not like a $10 bill that you and I can pull out of our pockets, because the statute itself says the wholesale value of a merchandise prize of $10. And I know that there was lots of different arguments regarding wholesale value, but I just want the court to understand that it's not like a $10 bill in this case.
Is Tic Tac Fruit one of the games involved here or not?
My client does not own or
is
have
that
any
a game
Tic Tac
of skill or
when,
a gambling device?
When Tic Tac Fruit was examined prior to this law, that was in fact when the law was wholly, you know, chance, or it was found to be a skill-based amusement game.
It was skill-based.
Based on the fact that it was now I don't know, because I don't know if that's ever been tested against the law as it is now, Your Honor. I don't want to mislead the court in any way, because the law right now says any element of chance must be in the player's control.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Mr. Carney, take a minute.
Your Honors, I may not have the mental acuity and response time to cover everything in 60 seconds.
Well, before you get going, let me ask you a question, Mr. Carney. I'll get you started. The appellate court made a determination that while the state of Ohio has the right to regulate gambling, they were unable to determine how they could distinguish between machines that would authorize payment greater than $10 or less than $10. And there was no legitimate state interest in that distinction for skill-based games.
The appeals court—
Is that the singular difference that you have with the appellate court?
It is, and the appeals court, in being wrong, notably never said you couldn't do a limit. They said, but this definition, when gambling has to involve chance, is doing things to games that don't involve chance.
Do
so
you
their
think,
problem seems
do you
to be the labeling.
Do you think a game like Tic Tac Fruit is a gambling game, or is it a game of skill?
Well, it depends. It was, under the old law, it had been found. In fact, there's an attorney general opinion from December 06 finding it to be a game of chance. But under the laws that then stood from 03 to 07, you could be a game of skill if you were 51% skill. Under the new law, you can't have any chance at all, and they don't challenge that. So if that game still runs the way it did, it's an illegal game regardless of prize value, if it gives out even a penny. But there were several different Tic Tac Fruit prosecutions or civil suits that involved, well, we retooled it, we changed the software, and that was the different form of retooling. But I want to stress as quickly as I can, the player issue is a red herring because they don't have standing. That's standing 101. And if they're concerned about the player not knowing the value as a form of vagueness, not only is there no standing, but if the court's still concerned, they could remand that issue to the 10th District, which never reached it, and then we could debate all about why that you really need a player to insist on players' rights. But on the issue about cumulative, I think I heard counsel saying that it's not the $10 or $1,000 debate, or whether it's $427.69, somewhere between there, but how dare you cap per play when you're allowing someone to win five or six times and win 50, 60 bucks? If that's true, and the only problem is the imbalance, not the actual number, but the imbalance, then fine. If that's right, we'd have to go back and say, we'll just make the cumulative the same. Whether you make it per day or per week, whatever time period, per month, we'll just say you can't win more than 10 per play, or 10 for the month. And that way, you couldn't give a per play more than that because the one win would put you over your monthly quota or your weekly quota.
Like, what do you want us to write in our opinion if we agree with your position?
That the legislature has a rational basis in setting this prize limit. And once you say that, everything is over other than remanding the vagueness challenge for players who aren't here. But just that there is a rational basis. If you go their way and you say there's no limit, then the other red herring here is to say, well, our company only charges a penny or our company doesn't give out prizes more than this. That doesn't matter. If you say this law is unconstitutional and that no limit is constitutional, then fine, the company that's more restrained in Circleville might do one thing, but if there's no limit in another city, maybe the mean streets of Bucyrus, there might be a shadier operator who's going to say $1 million. And as I understand their argument, it's there can't be a limit at all per play. There can only be a limit on cumulative. But if that is, then they're almost forcing our hand to set a cumulative limit at the same as the one per play limit. Fine, you can only win $10 a month or a year. That their argument breaks down however you cut it. It can't be to force us to be tighter. It can't be that it's $1 million, the sky's the limit. It can't be that we only set constitutional law by what they do in one company in Circleville, regardless of what everyone else does. And it can't be, as the 10th District said, it can't be the labeling that we can only touch things if they're chance. Because there are all sorts of non-gambling economic regulations we do every day, and they say, oh, but it's defining it as a crime. We do that for liquor law, we do that for securities law, we do that for consumer protection law. All sorts of violations of time and sales and transactions become crimes in Ohio. And if people don't like that, that's a matter for the legislature. Here, there's a rational basis for this line, and we ask the court to uphold it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. You did a good job with your minute. That concludes today's hearings. Marshall, please adjourn court.
All right. Here he is.